Savardin was silent a moment, watching the door they had exited from. Well, I said. Savardin looked back to me. I guess if you're coming back, I'd better pay you so you can buy some more decent clothes. An expression I couldn't quite read flashed across Savardin's face. Where did you get yours? I don't think I'll pay you that much, I said. Savardin laughed, took a drink of her tea, another piece of fruit. I wasn't at all certain she'd really eaten. Are you sure you don't want anything else? I asked. I'm sure. What is that thing? She looked toward the last bit of my algae-covered supper. No idea. I hadn't ever seen anything quite like it in the Rotch. It must have been recently invented, or an idea imported from some other place. It's good, though. Do you want one? We can take it back to the room if you like. Savardin made a face. No, thanks. You're more adventurous than I am. I suppose I am, I agreed pleasantly. I finished the last of my supper, drained my tea. But you wouldn't know it to look at me today. I spent the morning in the temple, like a good tourist, and the afternoon watching an entertainment in my room. Let me guess, Savardin raised an eyebrow, sardonic. The one everyone is talking about. The heroine is virtuous and loyal, and her potential patron's lover hates her. She wins through because of her unswerving loyalty and devotion. You've seen it? More than once, but not for a very long time. I smiled. Some things never change? Savardin laughed in response. Apparently not. Songs any good? Pretty good. You can watch back at the room if you like. But back in the room, she folded down the servant's cot, saying, I'm just going to sit down a moment, and was asleep 2 minutes and 3 seconds later. Chapter 20. It would almost certainly be weeks before Savardin even had an audience date. In the meantime, we were living here, and I would have a chance to see how things stood. Who might side with which Mianai if things came to an open breach? Maybe even whether one Mianai or another was in ascendance here. Any information might prove crucial when the moment arrived. And it would arrive, I was increasingly sure. Anander Mianai might or might not realize what I was any time soon, but at this point there was no hiding me from the rest of herself. I was here, openly, noticeably, along with Savardin. Thinking of Savardin and Captain Vel'Osk's eagerness to meet her, I thought also of Hundred Captain Rubrun Osk, of Anander Mianai complaining she couldn't guess her opinion, could rely on neither her opposition nor her support, nor could she pressure her in order to discover or compel it. Captain Rubrun had been fortunate enough in her family connections to be able to take such a neutral stance and keep it. Did that say something about the state of Mianai's struggle with herself at the time? Did the captain of Mercy of Collar also take that neutral stance? Or had something changed in that balance during the time I had been gone? And what did it mean that Inspector Supervisor Skyot disliked her? I was certain dislike was the expression I had seen on her face when I had mentioned the name. Military ships weren't subject to dock authorities, except, of course, in the matter of arrivals and departures. And the relationship between the two usually involved some contempt on one side and mild resentment on the other, all covered over with guarded courtesy. But Skyot Auer had never been given to resentment, and besides, she knew both sides of the game. Had Captain Vel offended her personally? Did she merely dislike her, as happened sometimes? Or did her sympathies place her on the other side of some political dividing line? And after all, where was Skyot Auer likely to fall in a divided Rotch? Unless something had happened to change her personality and opinions drastically, I thought I knew where Skyot Auer would land in that toss. Captain Vel, and for that matter mercy of collar, I didn't know well enough to say. As for Savarden, I was under no illusions as to where her sympathies would lie, given a choice between citizens who kept their proper places along with an expanding, conquering Roch, or no more annexations and the elevation of citizens with the wrong accents and antecedents. I was under no illusions as to what Savarden's opinion of Lieutenant On would have been, had they ever met. The place where Captain Vell customarily took tea wasn't prominently marked. It didn't need to be. It was probably not at the very top of fashion and society. Not unless Osk's fortunes had soared in the last 20 years. But it was still the sort of place that if you didn't already know it was there, you were almost certainly not welcome. The place was dark, and the sound muffled. Rugs and hangings absorbed echoes or unwanted noises. Stepping in from the noisy corridor, it was as though I had suddenly put my hands over my ears. Groups of low chairs surrounded small tables. Captain Vell sat in one corner, flasks and bowls of tea and a half-empty tray of pastries on the table in front of her. The chairs were full, and an outer circle had been pulled around. They had been here for at least an hour. Savarden had said to me before we left the room, blandly, still irritated, that of course I wouldn't want to rush out to tea. If she'd been in a better mood, she would have told me straight out that I should arrive late. It had been my own inclination even before she spoke, so I said nothing and let her have the satisfaction of thinking she'd influenced me, if she wished to have it. Captain Vell saw me and rose, bowing. "Ah, Breck Gyod! Or is it Gyod Breck?" I made my own bow in return, taking care that it was precisely as shallow as hers had been. In the Gerentate, we put our house names first. The Gerentate didn't have houses the way Radchai did, but it was the only term Radchai had for a name that indicated family relationship. But I'm not in the Gerentate at the moment. Gyod is my house name. "You've already put it in the right order for us, then," Captain Vell said, falsely jovial. "Very thoughtful." I couldn't see Savarden, who stood behind me. I wondered briefly what expression was on her face, and also why Captain Vell had invited me here if her every interaction with me was going to be mildly insulting. Station was certainly watching me. It would see at least traces of my annoyance. Captain Vell wouldn't, and likely wouldn't care if she could have. "And Captain Savarden Vendai," Captain Vell continued, and made another bow, noticeably deeper than the one before. "An honor, sir, a distinct honor, do sit." She gestured to chairs near her own, and two elegantly attired and bejeweled Radchai rose to make way for us, no complaint or expression of resentment apparent. "Your pardon, Captain," said Savarden, bland. The correctives from the day before had come off, and she looked very nearly what she had been 1,000 years ago, the wealthy and arrogant daughter of a highly placed house. In a moment she would sneer and say something sarcastic, I was sure, but she didn't. "I no longer deserve the rank. I am the honored Breck's servant." Slight stress on honored, as though Captain Vell might be ignorant of the appropriate courtesy title, and Savarden meant merely to politely and discreetly inform her. "And I thank you for the invitation she was good enough to convey to me." There it was, a hint of disdain, though it was possible only someone who knew her well would hear it. "But I have duties to attend to." "I've given you the afternoon off, citizen," I said before Captain Vell could answer. "Spend it however you like." No reaction from Savarden, and still I couldn't see her face. I took one of the seats cleared for us. A lieutenant had sat there previously, doubtless one of Captain Vell's officers. though I saw more brown uniforms here than a small ship like Mercy of Collar could account for. The person next to me was a civilian in rose and azure, delicate satin gloves that suggested she never handled anything rougher or heavier than a bowl of tea, and an ostentatiously large brooch of woven and hammered gold wire set with sapphires. Not, I was sure, glass. Likely the design advertised whatever wealthy house she belonged to, but I didn't recognize it. She leaned toward me and said loudly, as Savardin took the seat opposite me, "How fortunate you must have thought yourself to find Savardin Vendi!" "Fortunate," I repeated, carefully, as though the word were unfamiliar to me, leaning just slightly more heavily on my Gerontate accent, almost wishing the Radchai language concerned itself with gender so I could use it wrongly and sound even more foreign. Almost. "Is that the word for it?" I had guessed correctly why Captain Vell had approached me the way she had. Inspector Supervisor Skyot had done something similar, addressing Savardin even though she knew Savardin had come as my servant. Of course, the Inspector Supervisor had seen her mistake almost immediately. Across from me, Savardin was explaining to Captain Vell about the situation with her aptitudes. I was astonished at her icy calm, given I knew she'd been angry ever since I told her I'd intended to come. But this was, in some ways, her natural habitat. If the ship that had found her suspension pod had brought her somewhere like this, instead of a small provincial station, things would have gone very differently for her. "Ridiculous!" exclaimed Rose in Azure beside me, while Captain Vell poured a bowl of tea and offered it to Savardin. "As though you were a child! As though no one knew what you were suited for! It used to be you could depend on officials to handle things properly!" "Justly," rang the silent companion of that last word. "Beneficially." "I did, citizen, lose my ship," Savardin said. "Not your fault, Captain," protested another civilian somewhere behind me. "Surely not." "Everything that happens on my watch is my fault, citizen," answered Savardin. Captain Vell gestured agreement. "Still, there shouldn't have been any question of you taking the tests again." Savardin looked at her tea, looked over at me sitting empty-handed across from her, and set her bowl down on the table in front of her without drinking. Captain Vell poured a bowl and offered it to me, as though she hadn't noticed Savardin's gesture. "How do you find the Roch after 1,000 years, Captain?" asked someone behind me as I accepted the tea. "Much changed?" Savardin didn't retrieve her own bowl. "Changed some. The same some.
For the better or for the worse?"
"I could hardly say," replied Savardin coolly.
"How beautifully you speak, Captain Savardin," said someone else. "So many young people these days are careless about their speech. It's lovely to hear someone speak with real refinement." Savardin's lips quirked in what might be taken for appreciation of a compliment, but almost certainly wasn't.
"These lower houses and provincials, with their accents and their slang," agreed Captain Vell. "Really, my own ship, fine soldiers, but to hear them talk, you'd think they'd never gone to school."
"Pure laziness," opined a lieutenant behind Savardin.
"You don't have that with ancillaries," said someone, possibly another captain, behind me.
"A lot of things you don't have with ancillaries," said someone else. A comment that might be taken two ways, but I was fairly sure I knew which way was meant.
"But that's not a safe topic."
"Not safe?" I asked, all innocence. "Surely it isn't illegal here to complain about young people these days. How cruel! I had thought it a basic part of human nature, one of the few universally practiced human customs."
"And surely," added Savardin with a slight sneer, her mask finally cracking, "it's always safe to complain about lower houses and provincials." You'd think, said Rose and Azure beside me, mistaking Savardin's intent. But we are sadly changed, Captain, from your day. It used to be you could depend on the aptitudes to send the right citizen to the right assignment. I can't fathom some of the decisions they make these days. And atheists given privileges. She meant Valskians, who were, as a rule, not atheists, but exclusive monotheists. The difference was invisible to many Radchai. And human soldiers. People nowadays are squeamish about ancillaries, but you don't see ancillaries drunk and puking on the concourse. Savardin made a sympathetic noise.
I've never known officers to be puking drunk. In your day, maybe not, answered someone behind me. Things have changed.
Rose and Azure tipped her head toward Captain Vell, who, to judge by her expression, had finally understood Savardin's words, as Rose and Azure hadn't.
Not to say, Captain, that you don't keep your ship in order, but you wouldn't have to keep ancillaries in order, would you?
Captain Vell waved the point away with an empty hand, her bowl of tea in the other.
That's command, citizen. It's just my job. But there are more serious issues. You can't fill troop carriers with humans. The human-crewed justices are all half empty.
And of course, interjected Rose and Azure, those all have to be paid.
Captain Vell gestured assent.
They say we don't need them anymore.
They being, of course, Anandermi and I.
No one would name her while being critical of her.
That our borders are proper as they are. I don't pretend to understand policy or politics, but it seems to me it's less wasteful to store ancillaries than it is to train and pay humans and rotate them in and out of storage.
They say,
said Rose and Azure beside me, taking a pastry from the table in front of her,
that if it hadn't been for Justice of Torin's disappearance, they'd have scrapped one of the other carriers by now.
My surprise at hearing my own name couldn't have been visible to anyone here, but surely Station could see it. And that surprise, that startlement, wasn't something that would fit into the identity I'd constructed. Station would be reevaluating me, I was sure. So would Anandermi and I.
Ah, said a civilian behind me, but our visitor here is doubtless glad to hear our borders are fixed.
I barely turned my head to answer. The Gerentate would be a very large mouthful. I kept my voice even. No one here could see my continuing consternation at that startlement moments ago. Except, of course, Station and Anandermi and I. And Anandermi and I, or part of her at least, would have very good reasons for noticing talk about Justice of Torin and reactions to it.
I don't know, Captain Savardin, Captain Vell was saying, if you've heard about the mutiny at Ime. An entire unit refused their orders and defected to an alien power.
Certainly wouldn't have happened on an ancillary crewed ship, said someone behind Savardin.
Not too big a mouthful for the Roch, I imagine, said the person behind me.
I dare say, again I leaned just slightly on my Gerentate accent, sharing a border with us this long, you've learned better table manners. I refused to turn all the way around to see whether the answering silence was amused, indignant, or merely distracted by Savardin and Captain Vell. Tried not to think too hard about what conclusions Anandermi and I would draw from my reaction to hearing my name.
I think I heard something about it, said Savardin, frowning thoughtfully. Ime. That was where the provincial governor and the captains of the ships in the system murdered and stole and sabotaged the ships and stations so they couldn't report to higher authorities, yes?
No point worrying what Station or the Lord of the Roch would make of my reaction to that. It would fall where it fell. I needed to stay calm.
"That's beside the point," answered Rose in Azure. "The point is, it was mutiny, mutiny winked at, but one can't make a plain statement of fact about the dangers of promoting the ill-bred and vulgar to positions of authority, or policies that encourage the most vile sort of behavior, and even undermine everything civilization has always stood for, without losing business contacts or promotions."
"You must be very brave, then, to speak so," I observed. But I was sure Rose in Azure wasn't particularly brave. She spoke as she did because she could do so without danger to herself. Calm. I could control my breathing, keep it smooth and regular. My skin was too dark to show a flush, but Station would see the temperature change. Station might just think I was angry about something. I had good reason to be angry.
"Honored," Savarden said abruptly. From the set of her jaw and shoulders, she was suppressing an urge to cross her arms. Would be, quite soon, in one of those silently facing-the-wall moods.
"We'll be late to our next engagement,"
she rose, more abruptly than was strictly polite.
"Indeed," I acknowledged and set down my untasted tea. Hoped her action was on her own account, and not because she'd seen any sign of my agitation.
"Captain Vell, thank you for your very kind invitation. It was an honor to meet you all." Out on the main concourse, Savarden, walking behind me, muttered, "Fucking snobs." People passed, mostly not paying any attention to us. That was good. That was normal. I could feel my adrenaline levels dropping. Better. I stopped and turned to look at Savarden, raised an eyebrow.
"Well, but they are snobs," she said. "What do they think the aptitudes are for? The whole point is that anyone can test into anything."
I remembered 20 years younger, Lieutenant Skyott asking, in the humid darkness of the upper city, if the aptitudes had lacked impartiality before, or lacked them now, and answering, for herself, both. And Lieutenant Ahn's hurt and distress. Savarden crossed her arms, then uncrossed them, balled her gloved hands into fists.
"And of course, someone from a lower house is going to be ill-bred and have a vulgar accent. They can hardly help it."
"And what were they thinking," Savarden continued, "to have a conversation like that in a tea shop? On a palace station. I mean, not just when we were young and provincials are vulgar, but the aptitudes are corrupt, the military is badly mismanaged." I didn't speak, but she answered as though I had.
"Oh, of course, everyone complains things are mismanaged. But not like that. What's going on?"
"Don't ask me." Though, of course, I knew. Or thought I did. And wondered again what it meant that Rose in Azure and others there had felt so freely able to speak as they had. Which Anander me and I might hold an advantage here? Though such free speaking might only mean the Lord of the Roch preferred to let her enemies identify themselves clearly and unambiguously. "And have you always been in favor of the ill-bred testing into high positions?" I asked, knowing she hadn't. Realizing suddenly that if Station had never met anyone from the Gerentate, Anander me and I very possibly had. Why had that not occurred to me before? Something programmed into my ship mind, invisible to me until now? Or just the limitations of this one, small brain remaining to me? I might have deceived Station and everyone else here, but I hadn't for a moment deceived the Lord of the Roch. She had certainly known, from the instant I set foot on the palace docks, that I wasn't what I said I was. It would fall where it fell, I told myself.
"I thought about what you told me, about Ime," Savarden said, as though it answered my question, oblivious to my renewed distress. "I don't know if that unit leader did the right thing, but I don't know what the right thing to do would have been. and I don't know if I'd have had the courage to die for the right thing if I knew what it was. I mean...
She paused.
I mean, I'd like to think I would. There was a time I'd have been sure I would. But I can't even...
She trailed off, her voice shaking slightly. She seemed on the verge of breaking into tears, like the Savardin of a year ago, nearly any feelings at all too raw for her to handle. That sustained politeness back in the tea shop must have been the result of considerable effort. I hadn't paid much attention to the people passing us as we walked, but now something struck me as wrong. I was suddenly aware of the location and direction of the people around us. Something indefinite troubled me, something about the way certain people moved. At least 4 people were watching us surreptitiously, had no doubt been following us, and I hadn't noticed until now. This had to be new, surely. I would have noticed if I'd been followed from the moment I'd stepped onto the docks. I was sure I would have. Station had certainly seen my startlement back in the tea shop when Rose and Azure had said, "Justice of Torin." Station would certainly have wondered why I had reacted the way I had, would certainly have begun to watch me even more closely than it had been. Still, Station didn't need to have me followed to watch me. This wasn't merely observation. This wasn't Station. I had never been given to panic. I wouldn't panic now. This throw was mine, and if I had miscalculated slightly the trajectory of one piece, I hadn't miscalculated the others. Keeping my voice very, very even, I said to Savardin, "We'll be early for the inspector supervisor."
"Do we have to go to that hours?" Savardin asked.
"I think we should." Having said it, immediately wishing I hadn't. I didn't want to see Skyot Hour, not now, not in this state.
"Maybe we shouldn't," said Savardin. "Maybe we should go back to the room. You can meditate or pray or whatever it is, and then we can have supper and listen to some music. I think that would be better."
She was worried about me, clearly she was. And she was right. Back to the room would be better. I would have a chance to calm down, to take stock. And Anander Mee and I would have a chance to make me disappear with no one watching, no one the wiser. "The inspector supervisors," I said.
"Yes, honored," Savardin replied, subdued.
Skyot Hour's quarters were their own small maze of corridors and rooms. She lived there with a collection of dock inspectors and clients, and even clients of clients. She was certainly not Hour's only presence here, and the house would have had its own quarters elsewhere on the station, but Skyot evidently preferred this arrangement. Eccentric, but that was expected of any Hour. Though as with so many Hours, there was a practical edge to her eccentricity. We were very near the docks here. A servant admitted us, escorted us to a sitting room floored with blue and white stone, walled floor to ceiling with plants, of all kinds, dark or light green, narrow-leaved or broad, trailing or upright, some flowering, spots and swaths here and there of white, red, purple, yellow. Likely, they were the entire occupation of at least one member of this household. Douse Kate waited for us there, bowed low, seeming genuinely pleased to see us.
"Honored Breck, Citizen Savardin. Inspector Supervisor will be so pleased you've come. Do please sit."
She gestured to the chairs spread around.
"Will you have tea, or are you full up? I know you had another engagement today."
"Tea would be nice, thank you," I said. Neither I nor Savardin had actually drunk any at Captain Vell's gathering. But I didn't want to sit. All the chairs looked as though they'd impede my freedom of movement if I was attacked and had to defend myself.
"Breck?"
Savardin's voice very quiet, concerned. She could see something was wrong, but but she couldn't discreetly ask what it was. Douse Kate handed me a bowl of tea, smiling, to all appearances sincerely. Oblivious, it seemed, to the state of tension I was in, which was so obvious to Savardin. How had I not recognized her the moment I'd seen her? Not immediately identified her Orzian accent? How had I not realized I couldn't possibly deceive Anander Mianai for more than the smallest instant? I couldn't stand through this, not courteously. I would have to choose a seat. None of the available chairs was tenable, but I was more dangerous than nearly anyone here realized, even sitting. I still had the gun, a reassuring pressure against my ribs under my jacket. I still had the attention of station, of all of Anander Mianai. Yes, and that was what I had wanted. This was still my game. It was. Choose a seat. The omens will fall where they fall. Before I could make myself sit, Skyot Auer came into the room. As modestly jeweled as when she was working, but I'd seen the pale yellow fabric of her elegantly cut jacket on a bolt at that expensive clothier's shop. On her right sleeve cuff, that cheap, machine-stamped gold tag flashed. She bowed. "Honored Breck, Citizen Savardin, how good to see you both. I see Adjunct Kate has given you tea." Savardin and I acknowledged this with polite gestures. "Let me say before anyone else arrives that I'm hoping you'll both stay to supper." "You tried to warn us yesterday, didn't you?" asked Savardin. "Savardin," I began. Inspector Supervisor Skyot raised one elegantly yellow-gloved hand. "It's all right, Honored. I knew Captain Vell prided herself on being old-fashioned, on knowing how much better things were when children respected their elders and good taste and refined manners were the rule. All familiar enough. I'm sure you've heard such talk 1,000 years ago, citizen." Savardin gave a small acknowledging, "Huh." "I'm sure you heard all about how Rodchai have a duty to bring civilization to humanity, and that ancillaries are far more efficient for that purpose than human soldiers."
"Well, as to that," said Savardin, "I'd say they are."
"Of course you would." Skyot showed a small flash of anger. Savardin probably couldn't see it, didn't know her well enough. "You probably don't know, citizen, that I commanded human troops during an annexation myself." Savardin hadn't known that. Her surprise was obvious. I had known, of course. My lack of surprise would be obvious to station, to Anander Mianai. There was no point in worrying about it. "It's true," Skyot continued, "that you don't have to pay ancillaries, and they never have personal problems. They do whatever you ask them to, without any sort of complaint or comment. And they do it well and completely. And that wasn't true of my human troops. And most of my soldiers were good people. But it's so easy, isn't it, to decide the people you're fighting aren't really human. Or maybe you have to do it to be able to kill them. People like Captain Vell love pointing out the atrocities that human troops have committed, that ancillaries never would, as though making those ancillaries wasn't an atrocity in itself. They're more efficient, as I said." In Ors, Skyot would have been sarcastic on this topic, but she spoke seriously, carefully and precisely. "And if we were still expanding, we would have to still use them, because we couldn't do it with human soldiers, not for long. And we're built to expand. We've been expanding for more than 2,000 years, and to stop will mean completely changing what we are. Right now, most people don't see that, don't care. They won't until it affects their lives directly. And for most people, it doesn't yet. It's an abstract question, except to people like Captain Vell."
"But Captain Vell's opinion is meaningless," said Savardin. "So is anyone else's. The Lord of the Roch has decided, for whatever reason, and it's foolish to go around saying anything against it.
She might decide otherwise if persuaded, answered Skyot. All of us still standing. I was too tense to sit. Savardin too agitated. Skyot, I thought, angry. Douse Kate, standing frozen, trying to pretend she wasn't hearing any of this. Or the decision might be a sign that the Lord of the Roch has been corrupted in some way. Captain Vell's sort certainly doesn't approve of all the talking with aliens we've been doing. The Roch has always stood for civilization, and civilization has always meant pure, uncorrupted humanity. Actually dealing with non-humans instead of just killing them can't be good for us.
Is that what that business at Ime was about? Asked Savardin,
who had clearly spent our walk here thinking about this.
Someone decided to set up a base and stockpile ancillaries and what? Force the issue? You're talking about rebellion, treason. Why would anyone be talking about something like that now? Unless when they got the people responsible for Ime, they didn't get everyone. And now they're letting a few people put their heads up and make some noise, and once they think everyone involved has identified themselves.
She was openly angry now. It was a fairly good guess. It might well be more or less right. Depending on which Anander had the upper hand here.
Why didn't you warn us?
I tried, citizen, but I ought to have spoken more directly. Even so, I wasn't sure Captain Vell had gone so far. All I knew was that she idealized the past in a way I can't agree with. The noblest, most well-intentioned people in the world can't make annexations a good thing. Arguing that ancillaries are efficient and convenient isn't, to me, a point in favor of using ancillaries. It doesn't make it better, it only makes it look a little cleaner. And that, only if you ignored what ancillaries were to begin with. Tell me... I almost said, tell me, Lieutenant, but caught myself in time. Tell me, Inspector Supervisor, what happens to the people waiting to be made into ancillaries?
Some are still in storage, or on troop carriers, Skyot said. But most have been destroyed.
Well, that makes it all better then, I said seriously, evenly.
Our was against it from the start, said Skyot. She meant the continual expansion, not any expansion at all. And the Roch had used ancillaries long before Anander Mianai had made herself into what she was. There just hadn't been quite so many of them.
Our's lords have said so to the Lord of the Roch repeatedly.
But the lords of Our haven't refused to profit from it. I kept my voice even, pleasant.
It's so easy to go along with things, isn't it? Skyot said. Especially when, as you say, it profits you.
She frowned then and cocked her head slightly, listened a few seconds to something only she could hear, looked questioningly at me, at Savardin.
Station security is at the door, asking for Citizen Savardin.
Asking was certainly more polite than the reality.
Excuse me a moment.
She stepped into the corridor, followed by Douse Kate. Savardin looked at me, oddly calm.
I'm beginning to wish I were still frozen in my escape pod.
I smiled, but apparently it didn't convince her.
Are you all right? You haven't been all right since we left that Velask person. Damn Skyot Hour for not speaking more directly. Usually you can't get an hour to stop saying unpleasant things. She picks now to be discreet.
I'm fine, I lied. As I spoke, Skyot returned with a citizen in the light brown of station security, who bowed and said to Savardin,
Citizen, will you and this person come with me?
The courtesy was of course merely a form. One didn't refuse station security's invitations. Even if we tried, there were reinforcements outside, placed there to make sure we didn't refuse. They wouldn't be station security.
Those people who had followed us from Captain Vell's meeting, they would be special missions, or even an Andromianai's own guard. The Lord of the Roch had put all the pieces together and decided to remove me before I could do any serious damage. But it was almost certainly too late for that. All of her was paying attention. The fact that she'd sent station security to arrest me, and not some special missions officer to kill me quickly and quietly, told me that.
"Of course," Savardin answered, all calm courtesy.
"Of course." She knew she was innocent of any wrongdoing. She was sure I was special missions and working for Anander herself. Why should she worry? But I knew that finally the moment had come. The omens that had been in the air for 20 years were about to come down and show Anander me and I, what pattern they made. This security officer didn't even twitch an eyebrow as she answered.
"The Lord of the Roch wishes to speak with you privately, citizen."
Not a glance at me. She likely didn't know why she'd been sent to escort us to the Lord of the Roch, didn't realize I was dangerous, that she needed the backup that awaited us out in the station's corridors, if she even knew it was there. The gun still sat under my jacket, and extra magazines tucked here and there, wherever the bulge wouldn't show. Anander me and I almost certainly didn't know what I intended.
"Is this my audience I requested, then?" asked Savardin.
The security officer gestured ambiguity.
"I couldn't say, citizen."
Anander me and I couldn't have known my object in coming, knew only that I had disappeared some 20 years ago. Part of her might know that she'd been aboard my last voyage, but none of her could know what had happened after I'd gated out of Shiserna's system.
"I did ask," said Inspector Supervisor Skyot, "if you might have tea and supper first."
The fact she'd asked said something about her relationship with security. The fact she'd been refused said something about the urgency behind this arrest. It was an arrest, I was sure. Security, oblivious, made an apologetic gesture.
"My orders, Inspector Supervisor, citizen."
"Of course," said Skyot, smooth and unruffled, but I knew her, heard worry hidden in her voice.
"Citizen Savardin, honored Breck, if there's any assistance I can provide, please don't hesitate to call on me."
"Thank you, Inspector Supervisor," I said and bowed. My fear and uncertainty, my near panic, drained away. The omen, stillness, had flipped, become movement, and justice was about to land before me, clear and unambiguous. The security officer escorted us not to the main entrance of the palace proper, but into the temple, quiet at this hour when many people were visiting, or sitting home with family and a bowl of tea. A young priest sat behind the now half-empty baskets of flowers, bored and sullen. She gave us a resentful glance as we entered, but didn't even turn her head as we passed. We went through the main hall, four-armed Amat looming, the air still smelling of incense and the heap of flowers at the god's feet and knees, back to a tiny chapel tucked into a corner, dedicated to an old and now obscure provincial god, one of those personifications of abstract concepts so many pantheons hold. In this case, a deification of legitimate political authority. No doubt when the palace had been built, there had been no question of this god's placement next to Amat. But she seemed to have fallen out of favor, the demographic of the station, or perhaps just fashion, having changed. Or perhaps something more ominous had caused it. In the wall behind the image of the god, a panel slid open. Behind it, an armed and armored guard, her weapon holstered, but not far from her hand. Silver smooth armor covering her face. Ancillary, I thought, but there was no way to be sure. I wondered, as I had occasionally over the past 20 years, how that worked.
Surely the palace proper wasn't guarded by station. Were Anandar Mianai's guards just another part of herself? Saevardhan looked at me, irritated, and I thought, a bit afraid.
I didn't think I raided the secret entrance.
Though it probably wasn't all that secret, just slightly less public than the one outside on the concourse. The security officer made that ambiguous gesture again, but said nothing.
Well, I said, and Saevardhan gave me an expectant look. Clearly, she thought this was due to whatever special status she had decided I had. I stepped through the door, past the unmoving guard, who didn't acknowledge me at all, nor Saevardhan coming behind me. The panel slid shut behind us. Chapter 21. Beyond the short stretch of blank corridor, another door opened onto a room 4 meters by 8, its ceiling 3 meters above. Leafy vines snaked across the walls, trailing from supports rising from the floor. Pale blue walls suggested vast distances beyond the greenery, making the room feel larger than it was, the last vestige of a fashion for false vistas. More than 500 years out of date. At the far end, a dais, and behind it, images of the 4 emanations hung in the vines. On the dais stood Anandar Mianai. 2 of her. The Lord of the Roch was so curious about us, she wanted more than one part of herself here to question us, I guessed. Though likely, she had rationalized it to herself some other way. We walked to within 3 meters of the Lord of the Roch, and Saevardhan knelt, and then prostrated herself. I was supposedly not Rodchai, not subject to Anandar Mianai. But Anandar Mianai knew, she had to know, who I really was. She hadn't summoned us this way without knowing. Still, I didn't kneel or even bow. Neither Mianai betrayed any surprise or indignation at this.
"Citizen Saevardhan Vendai," said the Mianai on the right. "What exactly do you think you're playing at?"
Saevardhan's shoulders twitched, as though, face down on the floor, she had momentarily wanted to cross her arms. The Mianai on the left said,
"Justice of Torin's behavior has been alarming and perplexing enough, just on its own. Entering the temple and defiling the offerings. Whatever could you have meant by it? What am I to say to the priests?"
The gun still lay against my side under my jacket, unremarked. I was an ancillary. Ancillaries were notorious for their expressionless faces. I could easily keep from smiling.
"If my lord pleases," said Saevardhan, into the pause that followed Anandar Mianai's words.
Her voice was slightly breathy, and I thought maybe she was hyperventilating slightly.
"What? I don't..."
The Mianai on the right let out a sardonic ha.
"Citizen Saevardhan is surprised and doesn't understand me," that Mianai continued. "And you, Justice of Turin? You intended to deceive me. Why?" "When I first suspected who you were," said the Mianai on the left before I could answer, "I almost didn't believe it. Another long-lost omen fetching up at my feet. I watched you to see what you would do, to try to understand what you were intending by your rather extraordinary behavior."
If I had been human, I would have laughed. 2 Mianais before me. Neither trusted the other to hold this interview unsupervised, unobstructed. Neither knew the details of the destruction of Justice of Torin. Each, no doubt, suspected the other's involvement. I might be an instrument of either, neither trusting the other. Which was which? The Mianai on the right said,
"You've done a fairly decent job concealing your origin.
It was Inspector Adjunct Kate who first made me suspect.
I haven't heard that song since I was a child, she'd said. That song that had obviously come from Shiserna.
I admit it took me an entire day to piece everything together, and even then I could hardly believe it. You hid your implants reasonably well. Station was completely deceived. But the humming would likely have given you away eventually, I imagine. Are you aware you do it almost constantly? I suspect you're making an effort not to do it now, which I do appreciate.
Still face down on the floor, Savardin said in a small voice, Breck?
Not Breck, said the Mianai on the left. Justice of Torin.
Justice of Torin 1-esque, I corrected, dropping all pretense of a Gerontate accent or human expression. I was done pretending. It was terrifying because I knew I couldn't live long past this, but also oddly a relief. A weight gone. The right-hand me and I gestured the obviousness of my statement. Justice of Torin is destroyed, I said. Both me and I seemed to stop breathing, stared at me. Again, I might have laughed, if I were capable of it. Begging my lord's indulgence, said Savardin from the floor, voice tentative. Surely there's some mistake. Breck is human. She can't possibly be Justice of Torin 1-esque. I served in Justice of Torin's esque decade. No Justice of Torin medic would give 1-esque a body with a voice like Breck's. Not unless she wanted to seriously annoy the esque lieutenants. Silence. Thick and heavy for 3 seconds. She thinks I'm special missions, I said, breaking that silence. I never told her I was. I never told her I was anything except Breck from the Gerontate, and she never believed that. I wanted to leave her where I found her, but I couldn't, and I don't know why. She was never one of my favorites. I knew that sounded insane. A particular sort of insane. An AI insanity. I didn't care.
She doesn't have anything to do with this.
The right-hand me and I lifted an eyebrow.
Then why is she here?
No one could ignore her arrival here. Since I arrived with her, no one could ignore or conceal mine. And you already know why I couldn't just come straight to you. The slight twitch of a frown on the right-hand me and I.
Citizen Savardin Vendai, said the me and I on the left. It is clear to me that Justice of Torin deceived you. You didn't know what it was. It would be best, I think, if you left now, without, of course, speaking of this to anyone else.
No, breathed Savardin into the floor, as though she were asking a question, or as though she was surprised to hear the word come out of her mouth.
No,
she said again, more certainly.
There's a mistake somewhere. Breck jumped off a bridge for me.
My hip hurt thinking of it. No sane human being would have done that.
I never said you were sane, Savardin said quietly, sounding slightly choked. Savardin Vendai, said the left-hand me and I, this ancillary, and it is an ancillary, isn't human. The fact you thought it was explains a good deal of your behavior that was unclear to me before. I'm sorry for its deception and your disappointment. But you need to leave now.
Begging my lord's indulgence. Savardin still lay face down, speaking into the floor.
Whether you give it or not, I'm not leaving Breck.
Go away, Savardin, I said, expressionless.
Sorry,
she said, sounding almost blithe except her voice still shook slightly.
You're stuck with me.
I looked down at her. She turned her head to look up at me, her expression a mix of fear and determination.
You don't know what you're doing, I told her. You don't understand what's happening here.
I don't need to.
Fair enough, said the Mianai on the right, seeming almost amused. The left-hand one seemed less so. I wondered why that was.
Explain yourself, Justice of Turin.
Here it was, the moment I had worked toward for 20 years, waited for, feared would never come. First, I said, as I'm sure you already suspect, you were aboard Justice of Turin, and it was you yourself who destroyed it. You breached the heat shield because you discovered you had already suborned me yourself some time previously. You're fighting yourself. At least two of you, maybe more. Both Mianais blinked and shifted their stances a fraction of a millimeter in a way I recognized. I'd seen myself do it in Oars when communications cut out. Another of those communications blocking boxes, part of an Ander Mianai at least, must have worried about what I might say, must have been waiting with her hand on the switch. I wondered how far the effect reached and which Mianai had triggered it, trying too late to hide my revelation from herself. Wondered what that must have been like, knowing that facing me this way could only lead to disaster, and yet obligated, by the nature of her struggle with herself, to do so. The thought amused me briefly. Second, I reached into my jacket, pulled out the gun, the dark gray of my glove bleeding into the white the weapon had taken from my shirt. I'm going to kill you. I aimed at the right-hand Mianai, who began to sing, in a slightly flat baritone, in a language dead for 10,000 years. The person, the person, the person with weapons. I couldn't move, couldn't squeeze the trigger.
You should be afraid of the person with weapons. You should be afraid. All around the cry goes out, put on armor made of iron. The person, the person with weapons. You should be afraid of the person with weapons. You should be afraid.
She shouldn't know that song. Why would an Ander Mianai ever go digging in forgotten Valskayan archives? Why would she trouble to learn a song that very possibly no one but me had sung for longer than she had been alive?
Justice of Turin I-esque, said the right-hand Mianai, shoot the instance of me to the left of the instance that's speaking to you.
Muscles moved without my willing them. I shifted my aim to the left and fired. The left-hand Mianai collapsed to the ground. The right-hand one said,
Now I just have to get to the docks before I do. And yes, Savardin, I know you're confused, but you were warned.
Where did you learn that song? I asked, still otherwise frozen.
From you, said Anander Mianai. 100 years ago at Valskai.
This, then, was that Anander who had pushed reforms, begun dismantling Radchai ships. The one who had first visited me secretly at Valskai and laid down those orders I could sense but never see.
I asked you to teach me the song least likely to ever be sung by anyone else, and then I set it as an access and hid it from you. My enemy and I are far too evenly matched. The only advantage I have is what might occur to me when I'm apart from myself. And that day it occurred to me that I had never paid close enough attention to you. You, one-esque. To what you might be.
Something like you, I guessed. Apart from myself. My arm still outstretched, gun aimed at the back wall.
Insurance, me and I corrected.
an access I wouldn't think of looking for, to erase or invalidate. So very clever of me. And now it's blown up in my face. All of this, it seems, is happening because I paid attention to you in particular, and because I never paid any